Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Now, from BetQL, it's time for the Daily Tip with Michael Jenkins.
Dang it, he's talented, and let's be honest, I go for ambition, not look.
And Chelsea Messenger.
Don't kill the messenger, or the messenger will kill you.
Hey, Dad, don't forget about me, the dunkster.
Presented by BetMGM.
And here we go. It is the Monday edition of the Daily Tip for BetQL presented by BetMGM. Good morning. Coming up, a new champion is crowned at the Masters. We will get into that. Then at 6:20, almost time for some playoff basketball with the top seed set in both conferences. We'll get into that as well, followed by what you may have missed over the weekend at 6:40. During the 7 o'clock hour, we will crown a winner of MVP Monday before looking at both today's schedule in Major League Baseball and what to expect in the upcoming NFL draft. And finally, we get you through the 8 o'clock hour with more from the Masters. Maybe we dip into the NBA with the play-in tournament upcoming as well before Donkster time and our best bets at 8:40. Chelsea Messenger, how you doing on this Monday morning?
Yeah, good morning. After what feels like a month of coverage, we have now put an end to our Masters coverage here at the Buchanan household. My goodness, we have watched every single round. We have watched every single set, talk about, you know, what transpired over the day. So I'm kind of glad that it's over because we've watched a lot of Masters coverage here. So I loved the Masters. It was a good one. Scottie Scheffler, ho-hum, another Masters win. Mm-hmm. But we watched a lot of golf, so I'm kind of glad it's over.
Did you quite literally sit in front of the TV for like all day Saturday, all day Sunday? I know you bought that Masters pimento cheese set for, what was it, $2,500? And then you sat down with the entire family just a whole week at a nothing but Masters coverage. Like, you still have Jim Nance slowly narrating your morning when you get up. There she is, another beautiful Monday on the Daily Tip, ready to crown an MVP like we crowned a Masters champion at Augusta on Sunday. Like that?
Oh, no, I didn't sit on the couch. I was actually accomplishing things. But like I said, golf is one of the best sports to have on in the background when you're doing things. So as I was vacuuming, we just turned the volume up. And it was like the dulcet tones of, you know, the background music of the Masters. But we're going to Europe, like, in a few days. So I have a lot of things to do. So I told Jake, I was like, listen, I can't just sit around and like watch 9 straight hours of Masters coverage. To what he said was, well, I'm going to watch it. I'm like, well, cool. I'm glad I'm going to be the only one preparing for this trip. So I was doing loads of laundry. I was vacuuming the house. But Jake got every single minute in from the time where it was, who is it, Jake something teed off on Thursday. Like the very first tee time, we listened to that on the radio. So I think knew what every single golfer did this weekend, and he had to search. Cause if you just watch the regular broadcast, you watch like the leaders or Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. Oh no, we watched masters.com. We had it on the TV. So believe you me, ready to talk Masters, I suppose.
Yeah, we are going to talk Masters. And the good thing about Europe is you'll be completely ready to go. You'll have two or three bags perfectly packed, completely prepared. And Jake will have like a gym bag, you know? It's like, yeah, it was Masters week. What do you want me to do? I got two shirts. I got some boxers and a pair of slacks if we go out. We'll be good to go. Before we get into our coverage of the Masters, what we saw yesterday at Augusta, you had only, I wasn't here over the weekend, or I wasn't here on Friday because the lovely Catherine's mom was in town. One bet, that's it?
Yeah, I had to host a whole show without you, Jenks. I was driving the bus every single segment, so I felt like I had no time. Wait, I have not checked your Instagram story. Did anything big happen over the weekend that I might have missed?
No, there's no.
Oh.
When mom comes into town, everybody thinks, oh, nothing's going to go down. No, nothing went down. Had a wonderful weekend, but you missed. We just took in D.C. for like 3-4 straight days. It was just nothing but dinners and visiting different gardens or going to a wine festival. We had a billion things, but nothing crazy that might surprise you via the gram.
Ooh, you're now in Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce territory, where every time you do something big, everybody's going to expect something big. So welcome to that new chapter of your life. But I guess you wanted to talk about best bets. This was one that I wanted to play from the day before it got rained out. And I was like, damn it, I'm playing this Twins Tigers under. I really liked it. And then it was, I think, Mark Canha that ruined it. I think he had two home runs in like the first five innings. Damn it, Mark Canha. So the Tigers led 5-0 after five, had the first five under four. I even laid some juice here. So this was an absolute L for me, but whatever, it's one bet.
Yeah, no biggie, whatever. Still had a great week. I was not here. Dogster had a win and a loss, laid 15.5 with the Grizz. That was a loser because the Lakers won by three, and then the Celtics blew out the Hornets, and he was laying 8 with the Celtics. So for the week, Chelsea, you went 6-4-1. I went 5-3, and the Dogster went 5-5. It is a daily tip from BetQL presented by BetMGM. Great to have you with us on a Monday morning. Wait, is today tax day? April 15th?
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Oh, so exciting.
So exciting. I got a story about that later on. I freaked out a few days ago, but not right now. Now is the time for a different sort of green. If we're talking about money, we're talking about the Masters and Scottie Scheffler doing it again. 11 under par for the tournament at Augusta. He shoots a final round 68, beating Ludvig Åberg by 4 strokes. Scheffler winning his second green jacket in 3 years. He is only the second player ever to win a second green jacket in his first 5 Masters appearances. And now what we keep hearing about Scottie Scheffler, and it's not wrong, is how sort of inevitable it may be that he goes on this historic run. I have to say, it's easy to say when someone is coming off a major victory, but for the better part of, 2 years now, Scottie Scheffler has dominated the game. And even here, when it looked like things might get close on the back nine, he just methodically pulled away with a final round 68. Again, brilliant golf.
I think a lot of what makes Scottie Scheffler so good is not only that he is incredible on some of these approach shots, it's the fact that he doesn't make the big mistake. And we saw this especially over the weekend at the Masters, where we saw some really crooked scores. I mean, look at Tiger Woods. He was, plus one going into Saturday? And then he finished with, a plus 16. Yeah. So there were some really bad rounds at the Masters, and it played really tough. Like, any time that the leader finishes at, 7-8 under par, you know the course played really tough. But Scottie Scheffler is one of the best at mitigating mistakes and the king of consistency. Like, didn't he have that stretch where he didn't bogey a single hole? You know, and he had this, incredible stretch. So that's Scottie Scheffler for you. Mm-hmm. Never phase, never looks like anything rattled him. And from a betting standpoint, it feels like you have to bet on him pre-tournament, almost every tournament. Because going into Sunday, if he's even in contention, he is going to be the big favorite. Like, going into Sunday, he was minus 115. You know, to win it all going into Sunday. That's with a round still left to play. So at this point, he is certainly in Tiger Woods territory, at least when it comes to betting.
Yeah, he is. You're just not going to find any value unless you want to kind of get super creative with your bets. And he went off at, what, 4-1, I think, which, as you know, to win outright at any major tournament is stupid low. You're not getting nearly the value that you should. But let's go back a little bit to Tiger, and we'll finish with Scotty because certainly he deserves all the props here. But Tiger, you mentioned, started off where he was in contention. He said he had a chance after a couple rounds. He was one over. He's sitting right there. But again, 16 over. That is the worst 70-hole or 72-hole score of his professional career. And I was surprised to hear Tiger say, like, well, you know, it wasn't too bad. It's kind of the way it goes out there. But again, I think this is just a situation where his body breaks down. He can't hold up. But he seems very content with the idea that, hey, at least I made the cut. That wasn't something that I could do maybe a few weeks ago at a different tournament. For him, he always talks about how he still has work to do as far as his body is concerned, because his body is such a wreck because of all the surgery. So it, for such a competitor, it was odd for me to hear Tiger be like, it wasn't too bad. That's kind of the Masters. When for him, it was awful.
I think maybe he said that outwardly, but you don't think there's a little part of him that was dying inside? Because let me tell you, he looked miserable on Sunday. And I think a lot of it had to do with his health. Like, he was wincing from the first hole. Like, we were watching it live on Friday's show, and Dave was like, man, Tiger looks hurt. And he did the entire tournament. Like, he almost looked robotic because it looked like he was trying to hold in, like, grimacing. So I think he was in more pain than maybe people knew about. And you've got to remember, this is somebody who is one of the best at playing through pain. So if he's, like, grimacing even a little bit, it means he's probably in a ton of pain. Like, this is somebody that won, what, a U.S. Open or something with a broken leg. He used to run, like, miles in combat army boots. So an extremely high tolerance for pain. But even that, like, he just had that really bad round they couldn't come back from. And we all knew that, you know, the gates would, that everything would probably come crashing down when it came to the final 2 days of play. But at least we got one good round. Like, watching Tiger Woods birdie the first hole at the Masters is still an experience that I would put up there in the rankings for sports fans.
Yeah, anytime you can see Tiger do something that brings back some sort of memory or a spark of how dominant he once was, it's always special. But now it is Scottie Scheffler's time. And I always find it interesting when athletes are right there on the cusp, and you know they have all of the talent in their respective sports, and then finally they break through. And once they break through and they get through that monstrous amount of pressure that is put upon them, then they can go off because they know what it takes to win. And they mentioned this story throughout the Masters telecast. I'm sure a lot of people heard it, where a couple years ago, right before he won his first green jacket, he woke up with his wife, Meredith, at Augusta Sunday morning. And he started crying, and he said, I don't think I'm ready for this. Like, I don't think I can handle the final round of the Masters getting ready to win my first green jacket. And his wife said, no, you prepared for this moment. You have the talent. You are ready. And he went on to win. And now, not that we've seen a huge change in his demeanor, Chelsea, but certainly once you have that one moment where you do get it done and you are completely confident and you don't have that self-doubt, then you have your full display of powers at their peak. And that back nine yesterday, I think, was a perfect display of that, where after that incredible birdie on nine, where he was a couple inches from the cup, then he had a birdie on 10 as well. After that, even at Amen Corner, he had a bogey, gained a stroke on the field. Then it got to the point where you knew Scotty was going to win. He was almost in robot mode, where he was essentially lapping the field as much as you can at Augusta because you knew he wasn't going to be stopped.
Well, yeah, I think that's kind of his personality too. Like, as much as we talk about the emotions that he used to have, like, this guy's been unstoppable on tour. So I think we are well past the point of, like, oh, he's just, you know, on the come up, because Scottie Scheffler has been, there's a reason he was only 4-1 to win the tournament. I think the other storyline, if we're talking about guys who are unflappable, Ludvig Åberg, like, what a story. We have never seen somebody win a Masters as a debutant, or, you know, somebody who is making their first start at the Masters, since Fuzzy Zeller. And that was a long time ago. So the poise that he showed as somebody who has never played this course, finishing second at a 7-under par, like, I know he didn't win, but still, he is going to be a name to watch for, I think, the next, you know, few years. Somebody who has a ton of promise. And I remember we talked about him and we said, okay, this is somebody who looks like they're on the rise, but the prices didn't match. Like, his prices were somebody that you'd see with a big name. And I think the market knew that he was in store for a big round because, you know, it was a 3-horse race down the stretch with Scheffler, Ober, and Max Homa. Max Homa kind of ran into some trouble. He did what Scottie Scheffler doesn't ever do and kind of implode down the stretch. But yeah, there were some other good storylines other than just Scottie Scheffler.
No question about it. Fleetwood, Max Homa, Colin Morikawa, all tied for third. Cameron Smith, Bryson DeChambeau, each at 2-under tied for six. And then we had our guy, Willie Zalatoris, Tyrell Hatton, and Cameron Young, all tied for ninth at even par. Another storyline that I think didn't get lost in the mix because Scotty was certainly the favorite going in, and that paired out was Rory McIlroy, who still needs the Masters to complete his career grand slam. He finishes at 4-over par, so had his moments like he normally does, but not really in the mix. And then spinning this ahead to the PGA Championship coming up at Valhalla, once again, if you look at the odds, we're talking about value. Scottie Scheffler sitting there at plus 450. Rory is 11-1. John Rahm is 12-1. So even now, when you look at being a handful of weeks out, plus 450 to win a major is just, it's stupid low. There's no value there.
Yeah, but we said that going into last weekend. And what was it? It was a winner, Jenks. So there's value in winners. And if Scottie Scheffler continues the stretch, and here's the thing, you get good hedging opportunities if Scottie's even in the mix on Sunday. So I'll continue to play it.
I mean, you're not wrong. That's what happens whenever you dominate the way he has dominated. And there's no reason to think he won't continue doing that. So we'll have to get creative, but you're right. There's a reason why those odds are so low. It's because he has just been that good. Coming up next here on the show, the NBA regular season has finally come to an end, so we'll look at potential playoff matchups and the top seeds in the West and the East. It is the Daily Tip from BetQL, presented by BetMGM. Great to have you along with us on a Monday.
Chelsea and Jenks will be right back on the Daily Tip, presented by BetMGM on the BetQL Network.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Let's get back to the Daily Tip with Chelsea Messenger and Michael Jenkins, presented by BetMGM on the BetQL Network.
And welcome back to the show. Daily Tip from BetQL, presented by BetMGM. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger. Coming up shortly here on the show, we will get to the NBA as the association gears up for the postseason, and we'll check out the top seeds in both conferences. Chelsea, since we're talking basketball, did you happen to see Caitlin Clark on SNL on Saturday, where during the weekend update segment with Colin Jost and Michael Che, they had Michael Che go on and make jokes about women's basketball, which was pretty funny. And then all of a sudden, Caitlin Clark appears, and then she started making her own jokes at Michael Che's expense. So, and then at the end, she made sure that she gave full credit to the WNBA players that came before her, that people sort of blazed a trail for her to be able to go into the league, because I believe, is that the WNBA draft tonight? Is that right? I could be wrong about that. I think that's true.
I have no idea.
I think it is. And I think the Indiana Fever had the number one overall pick. So it was a nice little setup for Caitlin. And all of a sudden, you're seeing her get this monstrous amount of publicity, which is absolutely well-deserved. But it was cool to see her on SNL because that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I wish I would have seen it. I saw people kind of referencing it, but Jenks, I haven't stayed up past like 10:30 p.m., which is when Saturday Night Live airs here, in a while. So your girl is conked out way before then. I'm sure it was funny. I'm not a huge fan of SNL anymore. Like, it just doesn't, it's not, I feel like, as cultural of big of a deal as it used to be. So I don't stay up for SNL anymore.
Oh, I didn't stay up for SNL. I mean, I wasn't even, what were we doing? I think we were out on the deck or something, but I saw it going around on X or the internet or whatever, saw different articles about it. But no, I feel like as a whole, it's not the cultural touchstone that it used to be. It's not appointment television because there's so many different outlets now. It's sort of like, in many ways, it's kind of like journalism or sportscasting, where if you want to see something that is poignant, if you want to see something that is political, if you want to see some sort of take on something, if you want to see something that's funny, you don't have to go to SNL anymore. You have all sorts of different outlets from what to choose, whether it's streaming, whether it's going to YouTube, whatever. So yeah, it certainly has some relevance because of the guest stars and musical guests and everything in the history, but it's not the, oh my God, did you see what happened, that it used to be.
Well, also now we have more options, because when I was growing up, how many channels did people have? Like, I think we only had three. We had CBS, we had NBC, we had ABC, and maybe if the weather is good, we would get WGN, maybe TBS. Oh, we got UPN too. I would watch that some. But now you have like 50,000 streaming options. So I feel like it's just a matter of, you know, people have too many options. So of course, you know, if you only have, if you only had three channels, you would watch it.
Man, when I were, this was a while back, but one of my executive producers at, when I was at NBC, and we did a similar weekend update segment. It wasn't like weekend update. I mean, all it is, it's not like weekend update is some sort of grandiose
breakthrough
idea, right? You're just sitting at an anchor desk telling jokes. That's been done a billion times. So my executive producer was like, hey, free reign. You can tell whatever jokes you want and we're going to give you a lot of leeway here. Just give it a shot and see how it goes. And I was like, okay, well, that didn't make air. It was great for behind the scenes. They enjoyed it. Like, we can't air this. I'm like, well, you told me it had a lot of leeway, that it was weekend update-ish. I can't help it. It's airing on a local regional television station. But they liked it until they liked it in theory, but not in practice. I love that idea. It's like, hey, go ahead and make it funny and make it edgy. And then your dude were like, oh, well, not that edgy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I never felt like Weekend Update was one of the funnier segments on SNL. I think it's because of the format of it, because it's just jokes. You know, there's no premise, there's no skit, there's no costumes, and there's not really a ton of acting. Like, they would have guests come on and like act like some person in character, but a lot of it was just deadpan jokes. So I think that it's really tough, like, because the delivery is part, but the jokes themselves have to be really funny. Like, I didn't find myself laughing out loud as much during that segment as I did as some of the other ones.
Yeah, I think it depends on your sense of humor. It also depends on the joke itself and depends on the person delivering the joke, obviously. So there's a lot to that. But they've had so many different people over the years. They have a really great combination now. But it was cool to see Caitlin at least get a little bit of run on Saturday night. Well, now that the weekend is over, Chelsea, the NBA regular season, thankfully, I'm so glad the regular season is over, but we have the top six seeds in the Western Conference and in the Eastern Conference. In the West, Thunder, Nuggets, T-Wolves, Clippers, Mavs, and Suns are the top six teams. In the East, Celtics, Knicks, Bucks, Cavs, Magic, Pacers. And what was fascinating about yesterday, particularly in the East, because in the East, the Sixers are the seventh seed, Heat are the eighth seed, and then the Bulls are the 9 seed. The Hawks are the 10 seed. So they will be the play-in games that happen on Wednesday. No one wanted to talk, or no one wanted to take on the Sixers, right? Like, everyone was trying to avoid staying away the possibility of facing a Sixers team that didn't have Joel Embiid for the second half of the season, or for the majority of the second half of the season. But now he's back. And so clearly Philadelphia is much better than a 7 seed. Like, we saw yesterday, the Cavaliers, they would have been the 3 seed if they had won yesterday over Charlotte. Now, They lost to the Hornets. They benched their top players. They got outscored 32-14 in the fourth. They lost by 10 to Charlotte because they could have faced the Sixers, didn't want to do it, said, we'll be better off if we don't face Philly. And we were discussing this last week. It's the one team that, in theory, they're going to be a play-in team. They're not a play-in team.
Oh, for sure. And I honestly do not see the problem in doing this. It's part of gamesmanship, is it not? Because looking at the Bucks, I think they have a better chance when playing against the Indiana Pacers. This is a team that's actually matched up with the Bucks pretty well, but still, it's a team that kind of prides itself on running and gunning and picking up the pace and scoring a ton of points, in which the Bucks are pretty good at too. So when they have all of their pieces healthy, which we know the health of Giannis is going to be up in the air, but this honestly feels like a better matchup for the Bucks. So, like, I don't blame them for doing this. Like, I wouldn't want to face the Sixers and Joel Embiid in the postseason. So I just feel like it's gamesmanship.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. It's like, listen, we've worked this hard all season long, and in the first, like, we don't get to even enjoy the first round. We had to go in and face a team that potentially could win the NBA title. I personally don't think the Sixers are going to win the NBA title, but the talent is there. There's no question about it. But when you look at the odds, since we're in the East right now, there's just, talk about where there's no value. The Celtics to win the East, Chelsea, are minus 175. They're plus 180 to win it all. And then there's a big drop off because the West is so much more competitive. The Knicks are the two seed again, 12-1 to win the East, 35-1 to win the title. The Bucks are plus 550 to win the East, 13-1 to win the title. Do you see any value on any team if you're looking at a futures bet? I certainly would not lay a $1.75 with the Celtics to win the East. And the Knicks, okay, but Julius Randle's out for the season. The Bucks are a mess right now. I don't know where I'd put my money.
Yeah, I think this is a tough one. I think there's a lot of parity on both sides of the bracket when you're talking about the East or the West. I think for me, you look at the Sixers at 8-1. That's a solid look. The Bucks are like the second favorites, but plus 550 on the Bucks, a team I don't really want to trust down the stretch. No thank you, please. So it feels like the Sixers are the only choice, but my memory is not bad enough to forget what we saw from Joel Embiid in the postseason just last year. Am I supposed to completely clear that from my memory? I know a lot of this is price dependent. So 8-1 is a pretty solid look for a really solid team. But I do think there are flaws with the Sixers that I think some people may be forgetting.
Well, you're not wrong about that, because there was all that hubbub made about, I'm going to win the MVP. I deserve to win the MVP. The media was getting in on it, and then he does. And then just was not great in the postseason. So this is his chance for a little bit of redemption after what we saw last year. But in the West, now this is much more competitive. It's the Oklahoma City Thunder, the number one seed. They are 7-1 to win the West, 16-1 to win the NBA title, followed by the Nuggets, who are plus 140 to win the West. They are your favorites, and 3-1 to win the title, followed by the Timberwolves. I will say this. If you're looking for value, if you believe in Minnesota, they are plus 850 to win the West, but 20-1 to win the NBA title, which I think is pretty surprising when you're talking about a talented Minnesota team. Again, the three seed in the West, but it's so much more competitive because you've got the Clippers 12-1 to win the title. The Mavs are 18-1. The Suns have fallen back a bit, 20-1 to win the title as well. So you can see the odds much more closely together there. In the West, is there a team there that stands out to you more so than in the East?
I think this one's kind of a crapshoot, but I think at the end of the day, it's what team measures up the best against the Denver Nuggets. And that's why I kind of go against the Timberwolves here, because it's a team that kind of has similar strengths as the Nuggets, how they are very good in the front court. But are you really going to match up that well against Nikola Jokic? No. All of your big men are going to be negated because you're going against the best big man in the entire league. So it's probably going to be the Nuggets coming out of the West. I know they're plus 140, but still, this team's an absolute juggernaut. They've got the experience. They haven't even been healthy for most of the season. We haven't even seen Jamal Murray at full strength for most of the year. And Nikola Jokic is the most consistent big man out there as well. Not only is he good, but he puts up these type of performances on a nightly basis. So I think the West still goes through the Nuggets. There are some hot teams to keep on your radar, though. We talked about the Mavericks on Friday, how hot this team has gotten. And plus, I think they did a great job of addressing some of their key weaknesses, mainly in the front court, picking up Daniel Gafford, who's been pretty solid for them. Again, though, nobody's going to be a matchup nightmare for the Nuggets. It feels like every single team is going to meet the final boss when it comes to Nikola Jokic. So I still think it's probably going to be the Nuggets. I know it's only plus 140, but it feels like that's still the play.
At least it's plus 140 as opposed to the Celtics. And the Celtics, certainly, if you're looking at value, there's no value on the Celtics at a $175. And they're clearly the best team, but I don't know if I trust them in this spot. They're a team that I need to see deliver in the clutch, deliver when it counts, and that's going to be a narrative that sort of haunts them or follows them around until they get it done. Are the Thunder, though, are the Thunder too young? We did ask this question last week, and I don't remember if you think they're too young or not. I tend to think the Thunder, and the odds bear this out, they're just 7-1 to win the West. I feel like they need a little bit more seasoning until they get to that point. The seeding is great for them, but ultimately, this is a team, and Matt just put this in the chat, this is amazing. This is the youngest team ever, 23.9 years on average, youngest team ever to win the number one seed. So I tend to think they don't have that requisite experience that you need to sort of get through to the end. They're going to get there. They're built to win long term. I just don't think now is the time.
Well, yeah, because the Nuggets are a team that exists, and they have to go through the Nuggets. It's all relative, right? You can be seasoned enough. You can be have the, you know, willpower, whatever. It's just if you're facing a team that's better than you, it doesn't matter. So I know it's like a good talking point to say, oh, they're too young, but they're just meeting against the Nuggets. And that's why I don't like them. It's not because they're too young. It's not because whatever that is. It's simply because they have to face Denver, a really tough team.
Yeah, no, very true. I mean, assuming they get that far, and I see no reason why either team wouldn't, being where they are. You never know. It's the playoffs. We do get play-in games as well, Chelsea. Now, the Western Conference will have their play-in games tomorrow night. The Eastern Conference will have their play-in games on Wednesday night. So we got some time to sort of suss these few games out. But in the West, it's the Lakers visiting the Pelicans and the Warriors visiting the Kings. And the early lines on these games, the Pels are laying 1.5 in New Orleans. The Warriors are laying 1.5 in Sacramento. And don't you know, you better gear up for the whole LeBron and Anthony Davis giving it one last run, just like Steph Curry and the Warriors giving it one last run. Are either of these teams an actual threat?
I think the Lakers are. When Anthony Davis is healthy, and he said that he is going to play against New Orleans, he's one of the best defensive big men in the league. So it gives him a chance. And the fact that LeBron James, his shooting percentages are at some of the best clips he's had in his whole career. So I know he's old, but still, this is a run where I think the Lakers could possibly make some waves. No, they're not going to win at all, but still coming out of the play-in. Like, not all of these teams are created equal. Like, look at the teams in the play-in, especially in the East. Are we putting the Lakers on the same, you know, shelf as, like, the Hawks and the Bulls? No, we're not. I feel like the Lakers definitely could do something.
Yeah, think about it. If you put all these teams together, like, in a bowl, you're like, which one of these teams seems different? Hawks, Bulls, Lakers, Kings. You'd be like, the Lakers. They definitely have the most potential there. Whether or not they live up to it, a different story. But certainly, when you think about their injury history and now that they're getting healthier and with LeBron, always a chance out in LA. Coming up next here on the show, the news you may have missed over the weekend, including one NHL team moving to Salt Lake City. It is the Daily Tip from BetQL, presented by BetMGM, and that is when we come back.
Chelsea and Jenks will be right back on the Daily Tip, presented by BetMGM on the BetQL Network. Let's get back to the Daily Tip with Chelsea Messenger and Michael Jenkins, presented by BetMGM on the BetQL Network.
Welcome back to the show. It is the Daily Tip for BetQL, presented by BetMGM. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger. Coming up here in just a couple minutes, the Atlanta Braves look for a new plan with their ace on the shelf. So, Chelsea, I got to know more about this trip to Europe, which you've been talking about for a while now here on the show. But when are you leaving? What are you going to do? Europe, the last time I checked, has numerous countries. I don't even know where you're going in Europe.
Yeah, we're going to London and Paris for a week. So we're going to go to London for a few days. We're going to take the train to Paris for the weekend. We're going to come back to London, and then we will leave back home. I have a friend that lives in London, so we're going to go see her. She has a baby. I am very excited to see her. We swam in college together. And then Paris, we don't really have any plans. I just want to explore the city. I feel like that's the best way to have vacations, is to not have too much of an itinerary, because we've had this trip planned for a long time. And it's very easy to look on the internet and see all these people that say, oh, 5-day itinerary for London and Paris or whatever. And it just has thing after thing after thing. I want to be able to enjoy the city. And if I'm having a good time at like a restaurant or a bar or something, I don't want to have to jet off because we have to be somewhere in 15 minutes, according to the itinerary. I want to relax.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm the same way. I mean, I do know people who are very, very travel oriented, and they make an itinerary for everything. Like, I know I have some friends of mine, and they both love doing it together. So if you're both in on it, then good on you. I'm not like this, but they make those itineraries that are down to like the minute. Do you know what I mean? Like, hey, at 7:45 we leave, and then we're gonna be on the train at 9:15, and then we'll arrive at 12:14. You know, it's and I've seen this like on a spreadsheet, and it just seems like, I guess if you really enjoy traveling, and some people really get into it, then you have certain things you want to see, you want to document it. And I think that he has a blog that he sort of uses his trips to write about as well. And it's just, if you really enjoy it, that's awesome. But for me, the last thing I want to do when I go on a vacation is do something that feels like more work.
Yeah, I think it's a personality thing, because for those type of people, that is fun. Creating a spreadsheet and knowing exactly what you're doing alleviates some kind of pressure that maybe they are feeling about the trip. But for me, I don't feel a whole lot of pressure to like cross off all of the bucket list items when it comes to these places, because number one, I will be traveling with my 4-year-old. So that makes things a little different. I can't be like, Blake, it's time to go. Get your shoes on now. She's like, I can't do it myself. Because I don't, like, you don't have kids. But the thing is, when you have a child, like, everything takes forever. And this is why most parents are, like, always late places. Because somebody forgot a shoe. Somebody has to use the potty. Somebody has a piece of gum stuck in the back of their hair that you have to get out. So it just feels like there's always things that pop up when you have children. So like, I'm not going to do that to myself and put a lot of pressure on myself by saying, oh, we need to be here by this time. And plus, when you go out and explore cities, don't you feel like you want to act like you live there a little bit? Like, I don't want to feel like a tourist. I want to be able to like feel the feelings of the city and relax and not just be, you know, off jet setting from one place to another. So I'm excited for it. We don't have a whole lot on the schedule, but we'll see. I think we'll have a good time.
Yeah, you're going to have a great time. I will say the one time I went to Paris, it was really enjoyable. This is a few years back now, but the one thing that I thought was so interesting is that when we left the hotel, they gave us a paper map. And this has probably changed, but this was pretty well into the smartphone age. And I remember sitting at a cafe in Paris and just drinking some coffee, having a croissant, whatever, just taking in the sights. And I was amazed at how many people I saw who did not have a screen in front of them. Like, I looked around like, wow, I may never see this again. You're in a massive metropolitan area, and everyone is just taking everything in. Now, again, this has probably changed now, but that moment is very, it's very vivid in my mind, because I thought, I can't believe it's what, 2017, 2018, and I'm sitting here in Paris, and everybody's just walking around, looking around, interacting with one another, or just enjoying the sights. It was something.
I think once you see something like that, it's hard to not notice it. Because didn't you notice that at the Masters? Nobody's allowed to have phones. So instead of these iconic shots of people making putts where everybody has their phone in front of their face, you know, everybody's just sitting there enjoying the moment. So once you see that, because Jake was talking about it, how We know Scotty Scheffler's wife was expecting. I'm like, is his phone going to ring? Like, nobody has phones there. So yeah. I don't know how the chain of command worked. I'm sure he had an agent that had his phone on like vibrate or something. And I'm sure the people at the Masters were like, okay, I guess since you're Scotty Scheffler, somebody can have a phone attached to you. But like nobody was allowed to use phones. And it was weird to see the gallery of the patrons without recording every single minute.
I know. That's kind of cool, I have to say, because you rarely see that now. Well, Chelsea, I guess we got to talk about the Braves here, because we will talk about baseball here in the show and handicap today's schedule. But as we expected, it is official. Spencer Strider, the Braves ace out for the season, had an internal brace inserted into his injured right elbow on Friday, which is not as bad as Tommy John surgery. Spencer Strider has had Tommy John surgery once before, I believe in 2018 when he was at Clemson, but still obviously out for the season. So now the question is, A, what are the Braves going to do? And then B, if you're looking at Cy Young odds, you got Zach Wheeler 5-1, Zach Gallen 7-1, Freddie Peralta plus 750. I think the Braves have a good enough farm system, and they're good enough as a team, as we know, to step up and be okay. But this changes the futures odds in the NL pitching market in a big way.
Well, obviously, because Spencer Strider was one of the favorites. I do think for a second we need to put out a PSA that says, before you run and cash out all of your Braves futures, you need to remember that it feels like this happens every single year to a contender. Just last year when the Rangers were missing Jacob DeGrom, everybody said, oh no, the sky is falling. They're never going to do anything. What do? They won a World Series. So if you have a front office that's willing to go out and make some moves to shore up the gaps that whoever leaves in the rotation, you can still win something. In fact, the Braves, you know, didn't they win a World Series, or at least went to the World Series when Ronald Acuna Jr. was hurt? He's an MVP candidate. So I feel like the Braves can still be fine, even without Max Fried. As far as the Cy Young goes, I do think it's wide open right now, but you've got to remember that the sexy stat in Cy Young is always the strikeout. You got to at least have some. So that kind of takes me off of guys like Zach Wheeler. Zach Wheeler's going to have good numbers, but he also hasn't been getting a ton of run support. Wins aren't the end-all be-all when it comes to Cy Young, but still, he's the favorite for a reason, but I don't think there's a ton of value there, especially since there's plenty of other guys that can certainly win it. Tyler Glass now is intriguing. We know he can rack up the strikeouts. Last time against the Twins, I think he had 14 Ks. Also plays for a big market team. The visibility is there, and he's probably going to get the wins. So I don't think this is a market where you take the favorite. Tyler Glass now looks to be the most enticing option, at least to me.
I agree. On such a great team, 8-1. We know he has the stuff. That would be my selection as well. We do have some hockey news, Chelsea. Did you intentionally match your coffee cup with your blouse or top, by the way?
It doesn't exactly match, but like they're both orange.
They're both orange. All right, pretty close. I just noticed that. Well, so I know you're not a huge hockey fan, but this is pretty big in that it looks like, according to numerous sources, the Arizona Coyotes are headed to Salt Lake City. So this is an interesting story in that this has been going on for a while. The Coyotes need a new arena. And for the past, year or two, they've been playing at Arizona State's Mullet Arena. And they're dying to get their own hockey-specific arena in the desert, and they can't get it to go through. So what the NHL is going to do is they're going to facilitate a sale to Ryan and Ashley Smith, who own the Utah Jazz. This would start next season, by the way. It's going to start immediately. And then they're going to let the current Coyotes owner, Alex Morello, keep the intellectual property and the naming rights to the Coyotes. So if he can get an arena built in the next 5 years, then the NHL is allowing the idea that, okay, you can reactivate the franchise if you can get the arena built. If not, well, actually you'd have an extra team, but ultimately for now, until whatever is going to work out in Arizona works out, the Coyotes are headed to Salt Lake City, same owners as the Jazz. So Arizona has been awful this season. They finished 7th out of 8 teams in the Central Division in the West. But Arizona has long been looking for a solution here, and I guess the solution now is they're leaving.
Also, I think hockey might be a bit of a tough sell in the desert. It has nothing to do with the weather, but rather the fact that there's a lot of things to do. Like, doesn't it feel like the cities where there are a lot of fun outdoor activities, it's tough to be a sports fan? Like, look at San Diego. Like, it's a big city. They should be able to hold sports teams, but yet they don't. Because guess what? If the team sucks, people want to go sit at the beach. Same with the Tampa Bay Rays. Like, there's a beach close. Why would you sit in the Trop, which feels like a middle school gym, if you can go park your butt on a beach? So Scottsdale, of course, does not have a beach, or Phoenix, I should say, but there are plenty of things to do. So I feel like it's just a tough sell there. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, I think both things are true here, where there are some cities where it works okay. Like Tampa Bay is a good example. They have a great following, and so do the Panthers down in Sunrise. But then there are other cities like Atlanta. Yeah, and they're very good. When you look at Atlanta, when they had the Thrashers, or you look at the Coyotes down in the desert, it's A, there's lots of things to do. And then B, these are warm weather cities. I think that has a lot to do with it. If you're in Canada, why not just go ahead and go to the rink and watch your team play? And there's a cultural thing there too. But it's also more difficult when you're in the desert, it's hot outside, and you're saying, hey, it's beautiful, let's go inside and watch some hockey. So I think that has something to do with it as well. Coming up next here on the show, the winner might seem obvious, but is it? We're going to cast our votes and crown a champion for MVP Monday. She's Chelsea Messenger. I'm Michael Jenkins. This is the Daily Tip from BetQL, presented by BetMGM. Hour 2 is coming your way. Next.
Chelsea and Jenks will be right back on the Daily Tip, presented by BetMGM on the BetQL Network.